Imagine a quiet evening in a quaint Midwestern town where the hum of interstate traffic fades into the distance. A young couple seeking a stolen moment of escape checks into a modest hotel room. Laughter echoes softly behind closed doors, the promise of a peaceful night ahead. But as the hours slip away, something insidious creeps in. Unseen, unrelenting. What begins as a whisper of unease escalates into a nightmare that shatters the silence forever. This is the story of a horror that unfolded in the shadows, leaving only questions in its wake. Welcome to True Crime Sleep Stories, where we delve into the darkest corners of real events to lull you into slumber with tales that chill the soul. I'm your host, Kelly Brink, and tonight we journey back to 1980 to a case known as the Amana Axe Murders. Settle in, dim the lights, and let the narrative wrap around you like a blanket. Though remember, some stories linger long after the telling. Now, close your eyes as we begin. In the late summer of 1980, the Amana colonies of Iowa stood as a serene enclave of history and tranquility. Nestled in the rolling hills of Iowa County, about 20 miles west of Iowa City, this cluster of seven villages was founded in the 1850s by German pietists seeking religious freedom. Known for their communal living until the Great Change of 1932, when they transitioned to a more capitalist structure, the Amanas retained a charm of old-world craftsmanship. Woolens, furniture, and hearty German cuisine drew tourists year-round. The air carried the scent of fresh-baked bread from communal kitchens, turned restaurants, and the streets were lined with half-timbered houses that whispered of a simpler time. But beneath this idyllic facade, the modern world intruded with the roar of Interstate 80, slicing through the landscape and bringing travelers from afar. It was along this highway, at the Amana Holiday Inn in Williamsburg, now known as the Clarion Inn, that fate converged for two souls from St. Joseph, Missouri. St. Joseph, a river town on the Missouri River about 50 miles north of Kansas City, was a place of working-class grit, home to stockyards, factories, and the Pony Express's starting point. Here lived Rose Zita Burkert, a vibrant 22-year-old nursing student and single mother, balancing the demands of school, work, and raising her young daughter. Born in 1958, Rose was described by friends as lively and kind-hearted, with a smile that could light up a room. She worked as a secretary, dreaming of a career in healthcare, but life had thrown her curves. A failed relationship left her navigating single parenthood with determination. Despite the challenges, Rose found joy in simple pleasures. Time with her child, evenings with close friends like Tammy Berkman, who would later become a lifelong advocate for justice in her name. Then there was Roger Eugene Atkison, 32, a steady presence in St. Joseph as a repairman and installer for the General Telephone Company. Born on May 30, 1948, to Ruth Elizabeth Todd and James Hiram Harm Atkison, Roger was one of seven children in a close-knit family. He had married Marcella, but by 1980, their union was childless and strained, marred by whispers of infidelity. Roger was known as a hard-working man, handy with tools, often seen climbing poles or fixing lines in the humid Missouri summers. His life was routine, punctuated by the occasional escape, trips that took him away from the monotony. Rose and Roger weren't supposed to be together, at least not in the eyes of society. Their relationship was clandestine, a passionate affair born from stolen glances and secret meetings. Roger, still married, and Rose, focused on her future, found in each other a respite from their respective burdens. Friends later recalled how Rose confided in them about the excitement, the thrill of something forbidden. Tammy Berkman, who had met Rose through work and bonded instantly, remembered Rose's glow when speaking of Roger. She was happy, Tammy would say years later, her voice tinged with sorrow. But happiness in the shadows often courts danger. On Friday, September 12, 1980, the couple embarked on a 265-mile drive north from St. Joseph, crossing into Iowa with the sun dipping low. Their destination, a weekend getaway, perhaps to explore the Amana Colony's wineries and shops, or simply to revel in uninterrupted time together. The Holiday Inn, perched at 2211 U Avenue off I-80, was a convenient stopover. A two-story motel with 80 rooms, its parking lot filled that weekend with attendees of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association convention. Morticians from across the state had gathered for seminars, networking, and the ironic juxtaposition of life and death discussions. The hotel buzzed with subdued conversations about embalming techniques and grief counseling. The lobby scented with coffee and faint floral arrangements. Rose and Roger arrived around 7:40 p.m., checking into room 260, the last available room on the second floor at the end of a quiet hallway. The clerk noted their Missouri plates, a white 1979 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme, parked initially in a handicapped spot before being moved at staff request. They ordered room service, simple fare, perhaps sandwiches and drinks, delivered without incident. The evening unfolded innocently enough. Rose made two calls to her babysitter back home, assuring all was well with her daughter. A third call came in, from whom investigators would later puzzle over, as the records were incomplete. As night fell, the hotel settled into its rhythm. Guests in adjacent rooms heard nothing unusual. No screams, no thuds, no cries for help. The morticians downstairs wrapped up their sessions, retiring to beds with thoughts of caskets and ceremonies. Outside, the Iowa night was cool, stars piercing the rural sky, the distant hum of trucks on the interstate a lullaby for travelers. But inside room 260, the atmosphere shifted into something far more sinister. What happened next remains shrouded in the fog of the unsolved, but the evidence paints a picture of calculated horror. Sometime between their last known activity around 10 p.m. and the early hours of September 13th, an intruder, or perhaps someone invited, entered the room. There were no signs of forced entry. The door was locked from the inside when discovered, suggesting the killer either had a key or was let in by the victims. Theories abound. Did Rose and Roger know their assailant? The positioning of two chairs pulled close to the bed, angled as if for conversation, hints at a casual encounter turned deadly. Perhaps a knock at the door, a familiar face, or a stranger with a ruse. The killer, armed with a sharp-bladed tool, described variably as an axe, hatchet, or machete, unleashed a frenzy of violence. The attacks were brutal, personal, what investigators termed overkill. Roger, clad only in his shorts, bore the brunt defensively. Several fingers severed as he raised his hands to shield his head from the blows. His skull was crushed, blood arcing across the wall and headboard in gruesome patterns. Rose, fully clothed, suffered similarly, her head battered beyond recognition. Both lay face down on the bed, partially under the covers, as if positioned post-mortem. Rose's body was draped with a bedsheet, a peculiar act of pseudo-modesty amid the carnage. Roger's wallet lay rifled on the floor, contents scattered, cash taken, but not all valuables, suggesting robbery wasn't the primary motive. The television droned on, its glow casting flickering shadows over the scene, but the terror deepened with the oddities. In the bathroom, the sink ran red with blood, evidence the killer had washed up meticulously. Toothpaste had been squirted haphazardly into the bathtub, a bizarre anomaly that baffled detectives. On the floor, chips of soap scattered like confetti. The killer had apparently sat in a chair, carving a bar of motel soap with idle malice, letting the pieces fall. And on the mirror, a message scrawled in soap, but deliberately smeared except for one word. This. What had it said? This is for, this is what you get. The obliteration added to the psychological torment, a taunt from beyond. The killer lingered, perhaps. Footprints, or impressions, suggested he propped his feet on the nightstand, pulling up another chair to rest, surveying his work with cold detachment. How long did he stay? Minutes? Hours? The thought chills. A predator in the room, the victim's lifeblood cooling, while the world outside slumbered unaware. Morning brought discovery. When the couple failed to check out by noon on September 13th, a housekeeper, ignoring the "do not disturb" sign after repeated knocks, entered with her master key. The sight that greeted her was one of pure horror. She screamed, alerting staff and guests. Police arrived swiftly. Iowa County Sheriff James Slockett and his deputies, along with agents from the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, DCI. The scene was secured, but the killer had vanished, leaving no fingerprints, no weapon, only the macabre tableau. News spread like wildfire through the Amana colonies, shattering the community's peace. Residents, unaccustomed to such violence in their historic haven, locked doors and whispered fears. "It was very shocking," recalled Sheriff Rob Rotter years later, who was just 12 at the time. "Because nobody knew, was this going to happen again?" The mortician's convention added an eerie layer. Professionals of death confronted with raw, unsolved murder. The investigation launched with fervor. Over 400 interviews were conducted, from hotel guests to St. Joseph acquaintances. Autopsies confirmed death by blunt force trauma, the weapon likely a hatchet, given the clean, deep wounds. No drugs, no firearms, no sexual assault evident. Motive? Early on, a love triangle. Roger's marriage, Rose's past relationships. Sheriff Slockett, in 1992, confided to reporters it felt like revenge, the overkill speaking to personal rage. Suspects emerged, each a thread in the tangled web. Rose's ex-boyfriend, known for violence, was scrutinized but alibied. A jealous spouse from one of Roger's alleged affairs. Whispers, but no proof. Then, Roger's uncle-in-law, Charles Hatcher, a confessed serial killer who escaped a Nebraska mental hospital around the murders. Hatcher, who later hanged himself in prison after admitting to 16 killings, had ties to Missouri. Could he have tracked them? The hotel bartender drew suspicion. He argued with Rose that night over a drink order, then vanished without his paycheck, abandoning his truck in Iowa City 22 miles away before enlisting in the military. Gone, but not forgotten. Investigators chased leads, but he was cleared. More chilling, Ramundo Esparza, a vagrant heroin addict linked to a similar murder. Just 10 weeks prior, on July 3, 1980, William Kyle, 28, was bludgeoned with a hatchet in room 217 of the Sheraton Motor Inn in Galesburg, Illinois, also off an interstate. Kyle was found face down, wallet emptied, toothpaste squeezed on the carpet. Witnesses placed Esparza at the hotel with tools. He was in Iowa City the night of the Amana killings. Esparza died in 1983, uncharged, but forensic psychiatrist Dr. Park Dietz suggested the toothpaste could symbolize sexual gratification for an impotent addict. Deeper connections surfaced. In 1970, Jack McDonald, 23, met a similar fate at the Travel Inn Motel in Meridian, Mississippi. Bludgeoned, face down, toothpaste in the toilet, wallet missing. Investigator Paul Holes of Golden State Killer fame posited a serial offender, transient, targeting hotel rooms along highways, the toothpaste, a signature of deviant psychology. Other theories. An obsessed farmhand Rose claimed burglarized her home, rumored in the Amanas. Or a co-worker of Rogers, armed with machetes for brush clearing, harboring a grudge. Even cattle mutilations in Iowa that year were floated, absurdly linking to ritual killings. Evidence evolved. In 2015, Sheriff Rotter re-examined items, finding unidentified male DNA on a bathroom towel, likely the killer's, from cleanup. No match in databases yet, but hope persists. Tammy Berkman, Rose's friend and maid of honor at her own wedding, vowed at the casket, "I wouldn't rest as long as I was alive until I found out who did it and why." As of 2024, she and others plead for tips, the case cold but not forgotten. The Amana Holiday Inn stands today. Rooms renovated, but room 260's echo lingers. Guests report unease, shadows and mirrors, though officially, it's just history. The killer? Perhaps long dead, like Esparza, or still among us. This, a final mocking riddle. As the years pass, the Amana Axe murders remain a testament to the fragility of secrets, the terror of the unknown intruder. In quiet towns, danger hides in plain sight, waiting for the door to open. And that concludes tonight's episode of True Crime Sleep Stories. If the shadows feel closer now, let them guide you to rest, knowing truth is often stranger and scarier than fiction. Sleep well if you can. Until next time, good night.